Hello and welcome back to the Trauma Super Conference. My name is Jaya Bristow and I'm one of your hosts. And today I am super happy to be joined by Ziba Khan. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me today, Jaya. I'm thrilled to be here.
Thank you so much for joining us. I'm thrilled to have you. So Ziba Khan is an Ayurvedic clinician, meditation teacher, energy healer, and motivational speaker who uses holistic treatment to restore her patients' mental, physical, emotional, and spiritual health, and to prevent disease and disorders. You can read Ziba's full bio below this video. So Ziba, let's get started with a little intro for those who are unfamiliar with what exactly is Ayurveda.
Ayurveda is a 5,000-year-old ancient Indian system of healing. And in Sanskrit, Ayur means life and Veda means knowledge. So Ayurveda in English translates into the science of life. So the science is really about how to live. It's not how to treat the sick per se, but it's really about how to live your life so that you can have a happy, healthy, balanced life, and you can actually prolong your health span so that it nears your lifespan and you're not spending the last 20, 30, 40 years of your life on medication or in a nursing home. So it's really about how to live life in all facets, how to get optimal nutrition, how to sleep well, how to reduce stress, how to optimize your physical movement so that your joints stay lubricated as you age.
I love that. And it's, you know, what I love about Ayurveda is that, like you say, it's not just a specific form of medicine or a specific form of nutrition. It's a whole lifestyle and it can impact all our areas of life and create this sort of, yeah, much more balanced, harmonious, healthy lifestyle for all, like you say, the emotional, physical, spiritual side of ourselves. How is Ayurveda connected to trauma work?
So many of my clients come to see me, like most of us, we don't really pay attention to our lifestyle or our emotions or our traumas until they manifest on the physical level. Now we have heart palpitations. Now we're suffering from anxiety. Now we are eating mindlessly. Now we have arthritis and it's debilitating. And it's only then that we begin seeking out help, because the trauma has now manifested on the physical body. It's transmutated from the emotional realm into the physical. And so now it's grabbed our attention and we can't ignore it because it's debilitating us or it's debilitating our lifestyle. We can't sleep, we can't move, we can't digest food properly. Suddenly we have IBS. And so when my patients come to me with these physical ailments that are being presented in their body, I will address what's going on physically, because obviously they need immediate physical relief first. But as we begin to uncover the layers, like you mentioned, the four bodies of Ayurveda, the mental, the emotional, the physical, and the spiritual, once we begin peeling back the layers and we start getting into the mental and emotional layers, that's when the trauma, the history of the trauma, begins to manifest in our sessions together. And that's when I find out that, they've got a rectal tumor, for example. And as we begin to talk about things, I find out that they were raped as a little boy. And so that's where the energy will get trapped in the body. The energy of the trauma will get trapped based on what the trauma was. So the reproductive organs is where the energy of sexual trauma gets trapped, gets stored in the body. And so later in life, we might develop physical disease like endometriosis, fibroids, infertility, colorectal issues. And so that is really how trauma affects our physical body. So we have this external event that occurs and the energy of it gets trapped and then stored in particular systems in our body or particular organs in our body. And then those organs will either begin to underfunction or overfunction. And in both cases, they manifest as physical disease.
And what I find fascinating in what you're talking about is that, you know, you talk about these four bodies, but they're all totally interconnected, right? Including the spiritual body, which to some, and myself included, I, even though I do spiritual work, I can sometimes be a bit of a skeptic. And so when I hear, you know, like talk around like chakras and things like that, it can sometimes feel a little like, I'm not sure what you're talking, if this is for me. But the reality of, you know, the energy in the organs and how all these bodies are connected, right? So, and the physical manifestations of trauma, of physical trauma, emotional trauma. And I know through my own experience how, you know, I have been a survivor of sexual trauma and I have developed exactly the conditions you've talked about. And so, yeah, so tell me a little bit more about these different bodies and how they interconnect.
Well, Jaya, first of all, I want to thank you for sharing that with me. It's very personal information, and it's certainly a very difficult journey that you went through, and I just want to take a moment to honor you for that and for what you've survived and persevered through. But the way that, what was your question again, dear?
How the four bodies are interconnected.
So Ayurveda, as you know, is very, it's holistic. You can't really separate one from the other. For example, if we're stressed mentally, we all know that we have difficulty sleeping, right? And most often nowadays that manifests as insomnia. Our mind continues to race, we have difficulty sleeping. So that is an example of where the mental body affects the physical. So we have insomnia, we can't sleep. What happens to us when we can't sleep? Tomorrow we're low energy. We're not able to make the best decisions because we're tired. We're slow moving. We're more likely to get into, say, a car accident because our reflexes are slower. And all of that manifested from what? From the mental level, right? We're also more short-tempered. And so that affects our emotional body. So here we are, we're stressed out mentally, say by something going on at work, an incident happened, our boss made a passing comment to us that we didn't like, that causes us to have poor sleep. The following day, we're short-tempered with the people we love. We're irritable. We're annoyed easily by other things going on. We feel that we've lost control over the events of that day. And that's where the spiritual realm comes in, because the spiritual realm ultimately goes through two paths. One is meditation and the other is prayer. And both of those culminate at the same destination, and that is surrender. And so when we feel like we've lost control, we either go crazy trying to reclaim control and grip so tightly to the outcome events, or we're able to relax and let go and accept what is, while doing everything that we can to tend to the causes to have the highest likelihood of the outcome that we would like to have. But ultimately, we have to accept that, you know, you can plant the seeds for an apple tree, but you can't make it bear apples. You can give it water, you can give it fertilizer, you can give it love, you can give it sunshine, but still that doesn't guarantee that you're going to get those apples from the tree. But within yourself, you have the knowing that you did everything that you could to tend to the causes to guarantee your desired outcome. So when we talk about Ayurveda, that's really where this element of surrender and spirituality comes into play. If we're diagnosed with, you know, a terminal disease, it's terribly unfortunate, and we must do everything that we can to heal on the physical level. Concurrently, there's an element of acceptance and surrender that we have this condition for now, and we're not healed yet. And so that's where there is this mindset of, number one, accept what is, and then number two, tend to the causes so that you can have your desired outcome to the best of your ability, so that you don't live with regret. Mm-hmm. You live happily, knowing that you did everything that you could for yourself and those around you.
I love that. I think that's a beautiful analogy about the apple tree. And, you know, and it, like, if you can't guarantee apples, even if you do everything right. And at the same time, you're definitely not going to get apples if you don't plant the tree and you don't tend to it. And you just like go into your empty garden, like, why are there no apples? Right. So I think it's a really great analogy. And I really love that piece about surrendering and acceptance. Accepting, because I think that's a huge part of one's healing journey that often gets overlooked, is first of all, accepting our situation. And the more we fight against our personal situation, the more exhausting it is. And there's a whole extra layer of suffering and exhaustion on top of the actual symptoms of the illness itself.
Absolutely. And this element of loss of control haunts us. And it truly aggravates whatever diagnosis we've been given. I've seen it time and time again with my clients. They receive a diagnosis and, you know, there's that famous adage, what you resist persists. Mm. And until they accept that, yes, you know, I did have sexual trauma when I was little and I didn't speak up. And I found out that I recently was diagnosed with hypothyroidism. So our throat, our jaw, our neck region is where the seat of communication is in the body. And for a lot of us, especially those who identify as women, we get issues with our thyroid. We don't speak up, we don't speak out, we're conditioned by society more often than not to be people pleasers, to keep the peace, whatever that might mean. And so if we're abused or we're neglected or we are ignored or we're put down in any way, traditionally, we have a tendency of not speaking up. And later in life, we develop hypothyroidism. And it can be a secret that we've kept, you know, like the one I mentioned, the example of sexual abuse, say we were abused as, you know, a little child. And then as a grown woman, we develop hypothyroidism. Why? Why the hypothyroidism? Why didn't it go elsewhere in the body? Why did it manifest in the thyroid? And Ayurveda will say that it manifested in the thyroid because you're keeping the secret, right? You're suffocating your own truth when you keep a secret. You're not speaking up. And so the spiritual antidote, for example, to hypothyroidism is to speak your truth. Communicate what you want, and at the same time, balance your speaking by listening to others. So it's not a place of me, 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 and mine, and my truth, and what I want, but it's balancing your truth along with the truth and the needs of those you love. And that will help to make your thyroid healthier from a spiritual perspective. And oftentimes, like you mentioned, Jaya, it's that spiritual component that's missing in a person's healing protocol. It's not just about taking the synthetic meds or the herbs or making that change in diet, nutrition, supplementation, sleep, stress management, but it's changing the way that you live. It's changing the lens through which you perceive the world and how you interpret information. Because so often we have this voice of an inner critic that we've internalized in childhood. More often than not, it's the voice of a caregiver who is super critical of us. It could be a teacher, a parent, a grandparent. And they're no longer here with us in this room. But, you know, we'll spill a glass of water and start speaking negatively to ourselves the way that they use, oh, you're such a klutz. You're always dropping things. Why can't you do anything right? See, I knew I shouldn't have given you a glass. You're not ready for that yet, you know? And we do this to ourselves as adults. You know, well, why did I get this diagnosis? I'm no good. Only bad things happen to me. Nothing good ever happens to me. And it's this real negative mindset, which is also toxic to our physical body. Because where's the gratitude in an attitude like that? Where's the positivity, right? And so a lot of our healing also has to do, like you alluded to, this mindset shift of how we view the world. What story do we assign to the events that are happening outside of us? And how do those stories cause us to feel? Because we can put any angle that we want on any story, but when we come from a place of deep, recurrent traumatization, what we do is we constantly assign a negative meaning to the external events, and we cause ourselves to feel bad, and it makes our physical bodies very ill.
I think that's what's so great about Ayurveda, is it really does take that fully holistic approach, right? So not only is it looking, it's looking at the four bodies, and then it's looking at the person and their history, as well as what's going on for them now. And I think that's such a wonderful approach. And, you know, and when you're talking, the question that comes to me is, do you believe that most chronic physical ailments, and I'm not talking about someone, you know, sort of breaking their leg or something like that, I'm talking about the sort of more mysterious, unexplained chronic illnesses like hypothyroidism or endometriosis or any of these, do you think that most of these are due to unconscious trauma or possibly conscious trauma?
I do. I have yet to see a patient who did not have a physical ailment that was tied to a trauma that, according to Ayurveda, corresponds to that particular system. So, for example, in Ayurveda, there are three doshas, and the doshas are known as the mind-body-spirit compositions. And so you can have vata, pitta, and kapha. And vata is, to put it in a very basic way, vata is movement in the body, and it's a combination of air and space. Pitta is transformation within the body, and that's a combination of fire and water. And then you have kapha, which is a blend of earth and water, and that's the final product that our body produces in different processes. And when I see my patients, the first thing I do is diagnose their dosha. And pitta people, for example, they have a tendency, because they have elevated fire in the body. The fire in Ayurveda is your digestive metabolic fire. And they tend to have very elevated fire in the body. These are the people who tend to run hot in a room when you're sitting. They'll be the first ones to sweat and say, let's turn on the air conditioner, it's too hot, you know? They tend to develop issues with their digestive system as a result. And it's not by accident, you know, so because they're pitta, because their fire is elevated in the body, they are susceptible to liver issues, gallbladder issues, diabetes, pancreatic issues, dysfunction with their spleen. And so that's their particular predisposition. Now, just because your pitta dosha does not mean you will develop irritable bowel syndrome and that there's nothing you can do about it. It's just a predisposition. And the lovely thing about Ayurveda is once you're diagnosed with your dosha, you can find out what diseases you are prone to developing later in life and do something about it now preemptively and not have to wait until 30, 40, 50 years down the road you develop this illness. And so, you know, when I see, for example, pitta dosha people, it's never by accident that they have IBS or they have chronic diarrhea or they have diabetes or they have fatty liver syndrome. Because it'll be rare for me to see a kapha dosha person with those issues or a vata dosha person with those issues. So our vata dosha people tend to have a propensity towards developing neurological issues, anxiety is a big one with vata dosha people, heart palpitations, twitching muscles, different places in the body. And then our kapha dosha people are very susceptible to high cholesterol, heart disease, and depression. When it comes to emotion, they're very susceptible to depression. Our pitta dosha people, because they're fiery they tend to be very angry people, short-tempered, hot-tempered. And as a result, anger in Ayurveda is said to be stored in the liver. And so that's why they'll develop a liver imbalance. And so when we have trauma, we have this external event that's happened to us. And if we're angry and resentful with our caretaker who did this to us, but we suppress it, years later, we will develop liver and gallbladder issues, because that's where anger and resentment respectively are housed, in the liver and the gallbladder. And so when a patient comes to me and says, "Ziba, I have fatty liver syndrome, what do I do?" We'll begin treating it physically first, but then I'll delve into, what are you angry about? Who are you not forgiving in your life? Who are you holding resentment towards, and why? And how can we release this and let go? And again, Jaya, that's where the spiritual component then comes in, because forgiveness has a massive spiritual component to it, and it cannot be ignored. It cannot be ignored, especially when someone has done something so terrible and violated our bodies. You know, when they've neglected us, there's that resistance within us where we don't want to forgive, because there's a part of us that truly believes that if we forgive, we're condoning, we're excusing, we're justifying or validating what they did to us. And that's where spirituality and this element of surrender and acceptance comes into play.
And I think, you know, what you're talking about, the different doshas provide a predisposition to certain conditions. And I think I just want to highlight that word so that anyone listening doesn't start thinking, oh, I know that I'm this dosha, does that mean I'm going to get all these things? Or sometimes, you know, some of us are one dosha but have elements from the others and things like that. So I think it's really interesting in everything you're saying. And the other point that really resonated was this idea that, you know, you're not helpless. One might have predispositions to that, but what's really great about Ayurveda is it's not so much about curing as it is creating a balanced lifestyle and also preventing. And so maybe we can talk a little bit more first about how Ayurveda can heal trauma, and then maybe about how Ayurveda can help prevent these conditions that can develop from trauma.
Absolutely. I just want to speak to this very important point that you made, that just because we have a predisposition, that doesn't mean we're predestined to arrive there. There's a big difference. So it just means we have a higher chance of developing something, but it's not guaranteed that we will develop it. And it's always nice to know what we're at risk of developing so that we can change our habits today, instead of being diagnosed with something and then trying to reverse that. So Ayurveda manifests differently in different parts of the body. And ultimately what it teaches us, you know, based on what kind of trauma we've had and where we stored that energy and trapped it, what Ayurveda teaches us is that we have to balance. And that's how we return to our homeostasis and optimal health. And sometimes balancing, you know, if our scales are off, sometimes that means that we have to add more weight to one side, or sometimes we have to take some extra weight off another side, you know, to bring that up. Or sometimes we have to add to both sides or remove from both sides. So Ayurveda ultimately is this fine balancing act between, as you mentioned, the four bodies, the mental body, the emotional body, the physical body, and the spiritual body. And so depending on what the disease is and where it's manifested in the body, the antidote is different, the treatment's different. So say we develop a condition that has to do, let's go back to our example of, you know, a rectal tumor. What's being threatened in our body is our sense of safety and security. And that's why it's developed in that region of the body. And so Ayurveda would tell us that from a spiritual perspective and from a healing perspective, what we need to do is ground ourselves. Ground ourselves in the truth, ground yourselves using the earth, you know, remove your shoes and go for a walk. Go for a walk in nature, barefoot, on grass or on the beach in the sand, you know. And if you can't do either of those things, then at least walk on concrete if need be for 10 minutes a day. And that also helps to cleanse the, you know, all the EMF electrons that we've absorbed during the day. It's extremely healing just to walk barefoot in nature, just for 10 minutes a day. It can have a fabulous, fabulous effect. It lowers our heart rate, it reduces our blood pressure. And as we know from all the Japanese studies, I think it's called Shinrin Yoku in Japanese, forest bathing. There's so many effects now, and scientific studies showing about the benefits of spending time in nature and the healing power of being out in nature. So when we have any difficulty with our sexual organs or our excretory system, the antidote to that is grounding ourselves in the truth, grounding ourselves in nature. When we have issues with our digestive organs, we need to process our emotions. If we're having liver problems, if we say we're bouncing back and forth between diarrhea and constipation, it's unresolved emotion. And it usually has to do with anger or a sense of being overly critical or indecisive, low self-esteem. Those are all housed in the center part of our torso. And then we move up to the heart region, to the immune system, to the thymus. And this is the seat of love. And love is, it's a twofold path. It's both giving love as well as receiving love. And oftentimes we're very good at giving love, but we're awful at receiving and letting compliments land within us, right? You know, someone says, oh, what a lovely dress you're wearing. Oh, this whole thing I bought it 10 years ago on sale. You know, we'll push it away. We'll diminish it. We won't allow it to really absorb within our system. And so many of us need to work on how we receive love. And do we really enrich the experience of love? Do we allow it to be absorbed in our heart, both in our physical heart as well as our emotional heart? And then we move up to the body, and we have the thyroid, we have the neck, the jaw region, the throat. And here we have to deal with, again, communication, speaking our truth, and looking at how we're living life. Are we living life based on our own truth and what we want to do? Or are we living life out to meet someone else's expectations of us? You know, are we living the life that our parents wanted us to live and we're miserable doing it? Or is this truly what we want to be doing? And usually when we're diagnosed with thyroid dysfunction, we have to change our life in a big way. Sometimes that means exiting a relationship where we've not been able to speak our truth for decades. And time again, I've seen women's hypothyroid levels come back up to normal when they actually exited toxic relationships. Now, that was not the only thing that they did, but that was a big piece of their healing.
And I think that's also really important, right? That there isn't just one thing that someone can do to magically solve something. And I think that can often be part of the problem in, you know, lots of different approaches, is that sometimes people are like, this is the magical thing that's going to solve all your issues. And actually, it's a combination of things. It's working on all the different levels. It's working, you know, with all the different symptoms, but also on all the different bodies, all the different levels, and really understanding, yeah, taking a fully holistic approach and understanding what's happening in your life. What are the recent traumas? What are the historical traumas? What's causing stress right now? You know, what's your living situation? What's the atmosphere like, right? Some people are very sensitive to dampness, for example. And I know that that's also found in the doshas, or to too much heat. Or so, you know, it's really looking at all the different elements. And so leaving an abusive relationship, of course, can only be beneficial to someone. And it will definitely help them and improve symptoms. But that on its own is probably not what's going to fully cure them.
Absolutely. And I'm so glad that you highlighted that, Jaya, because it is about the synergy of the different treatments. There isn't going to be one modality that's going to be the panacea. There just won't be. It has to be a combination of many different things. And whether you're looking at Ayurveda or you're looking at traditional Chinese medicine, there are many herbs that are prescribed for these different conditions. But what works for one person will be ineffective for someone else. And so you have to know, again, in combination with their dosha, in combination with their genetics, their medical history, how severe the current condition is, the time of year, the season that they're coming to you, their age, how long they've had this condition for. In combination with all of those things, only then are you able to prescribe a protocol for them. So Ayurveda is very much one size fits all. It is absolutely customized. You know, we go to a Western doctor, and I have nothing against Western medicine. You know, it definitely has its place, but it's very much one size fits all. You go to the doctor, they prescribe you with diabetes, or they diagnose you with diabetes, and then they prescribe you with metformin or insulin, right? You go to an Ayurvedic doctor, and if you have diabetes, there's a list of herbs that they can give to you, and it's customized to you.
You know? I think that's so important, and that was something I was going to mention as well when you were talking about, you know, Ayurveda or Chinese medicine as being customized. And that is, like you say, the issue with Western medicine, or also known as allopathic medicine, is that it does, you know, there's set medicines for someone, and they don't, not only do they treat each condition with sort of like one off, maybe three or four different types of medicines, depending if you react badly to one, but usually it's just the standard thing. But they only look at symptom by symptom. So for example, I'm someone, I have a whole different set and cocktail of multiple like syndromes and symptoms, and I have to go to different specialists for each one, and there's no communication between the departments, right? So one will give me something for one condition, but that's having an adverse reaction to one of my other conditions. Whereas when I go and see an Ayurvedic doctor, they take the time to really listen to everything, and they're thinking when they're prescribing herbs, they're thinking about all the different pieces of the puzzle and how everything interlinks.
Absolutely. You're spot on. It's a systemic approach. You know, you are the liver specialist, the thyroid specialist, the brain specialist, the reproductive organ specialist, you know, and you have to look at, what we do is we customize, we tailor our protocols, but most importantly, we have to find out what the root cause of the symptoms are. And sometimes you have an issue in one organ, but if we trace it back far enough, this organ over here is actually causing the problem, you know? So you have polycystic ovarian syndrome, but if we go back far enough, it's stemming from your liver, not detoxifying correctly. So really, we need to treat the liver. And then there will be this trickle-down effect, and the PCOS will begin to go away. And eventually, I've seen it disappear as well. When you find out what the root cause is, you go to the source and you treat the source. And again, how do you treat the source? It depends on the individual. It depends on their body. And nowadays, we've seen a lot of allergies manifest, a lot of food allergies. And so again, it's not a one size fits all, because what I prescribe to one person can be absolute poison to another person if they're allergic to it.
Absolutely.
Right? So we have to look at potential side effects as well. You can't just get on the internet and type in a condition, because it'll pull up a list of, say, 20 herbs. Which one do you take for you, and in what dosage? Because very often, therapeutic doses of herbs are quite high. And most people will go out and they'll get a bottle of something, of tulsi, of Indian holy basil, for example, and they'll just take the amount on the bottle, when in fact they need a much higher dose because they have a condition. And the doses that we see written on the back of supplement bottles are actually for a healthy person who's looking to maintain their health, not for a sick person who's looking to improve their health. And so we take too little of the herb, we see no effects, and we say, oh, this whole natural thing doesn't work.
Yeah. And I think another thing is, you know, when you were talking about the trickle-down effect, so one of the things with trickle-down effects is that they take longer, right? Because you're not just treating the individual symptom and you're going to the root cause. So it is a much slower process. And so sometimes I know people can feel a little frustrated, like, oh, this isn't working. Unlike, you know, if you take paracetamol for a headache, within 30 minutes, your headache goes. Whereas here, because it's not treating the symptoms, because it is more holistic, because it's looking at the root causes, it is a slower process, but it's also much more of an ingrained process, right? It's then the symptom isn't going to come back 2 days later. It's sort of, so yeah, so let's talk more about this kind of creating a balanced lifestyle and how we can do that to prevent disease, especially disease from trauma, rather than just trying to cure and chase our tails.
Well, the most important thing when it comes to trauma is processing our emotions. And that means different things to different people. Again, based on where the energy is trapped in your body, where the emotion is trapped in the body, you do different things. But the elements, there are some basic foundational elements that are always present according to Ayurveda. The first one is diet and nutrition. So diet is what we eat and how we eat it. Are you eating salads all the time? Are you eating raw foods all the time? Or are you lightly steaming them? Like Ayurveda will say, in general, it's not such a fantastic idea to eat salads because they're very difficult to digest and you absorb far more nutrition if your food is lightly cooked, at the very least. And it's a lot easier on your digestive system to extract the nutrients from lightly cooked food or fully cooked food rather than from raw vegetables. So that's one thing, that's diet. Then there's nutrition, which is, so diet is what we ingest. Nutrition is what we absorb. What is our body retaining? Because sometimes, for example, if we have dysbiosis or leaky gut syndrome, we can be eating phenomenal, organic, non-GMO, whole, real, natural food, but we have leaky gut syndrome, and so our body's not absorbing any of the nutrients. Mm. Then we get a weakened immune system, and then we'll develop a condition of some kind, say rheumatoid arthritis, right? And again, it's not so much that we have a problem with our joints. That's how it's manifested, is joint pain. But the root cause is our colon or our small intestine. And so that's what Ayurveda would look like. Again, it would look at the root cause of your arthritis. Because something that fascinates me is we were not born with these conditions, Jaya, right? If we develop them over the course of our life. So the question becomes, what triggered your body to develop this particular condition at this point in your life? And that's what fascinates me.
Absolutely, same. And I really love that distinction between diet and nutrition, because I think the terms sometimes get used interchangeably and they're not interchangeable. They actually mean quite different things. So I really appreciate you bringing that in as well.
Yeah, and then Ayurveda also looks at your sleep. Are you able to fall asleep easily? Are you able to stay asleep? How much sleep are you getting? Because that's very important, because our body heals physically while we're asleep. Our body is able mentally to process a lot of the events of the day while we're asleep, because we just don't have enough time while we're awake to actually sit and process events that have occurred, because we're so go, 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 and we've got to do the next task. So sleep is very, very important for mental health as well, because while we're asleep, the beta amyloid plaque in our brain gets flushed out. And if we don't get adequate sleep, we wake up in a way with a dirty mind, if you will. And that's when we begin experiencing brain fog. We'll walk into a room and we can't remember what we came in to get. You know, and it's not that we're only tired, but when we get inadequate sleep for an extended period of time, we get chronic brain fog, we get memory issues, we have concentration and focus problems. So when we look at Ayurveda, you know, we sleep, we look at diet, nutrition, we look at relationships. Are you happy in your relationships, in your primary relationships, you know, with the people you live with, especially? What are your sources of stress? How can you reduce those? And again, the two biggest stress reducers in Ayurveda are meditation and prayer. And then we'll also look at physical movement. How much physical movement are you getting? And it doesn't have to be hardcore, put your runners on and go to the gym, but it can easily be housework is a form of physical movement, you know, walking the dog or just breaking a light sweat. In fact, Ayurveda says, do not go at 100% of what you can physically do. Operate more around 60 to 80%. You know, because you shouldn't be exhausted after you exercise. According to Ayurveda, you should be invigorated.
Yeah.
Right? So don't drain yourself. And then we also look at supplementation in Ayurveda. So, you know, going back to diet, nutrition, whatever we're not absorbing, we're going to need to take through supplements, whether those are vitamins or minerals or herbs. Supplementation will be required to some extent in Ayurveda. And so that's how it helps us to deal with trauma, whether it's emotional or mental or physical trauma. When we're able to balance all of these facets of our life through lifestyle changes, we feel, truly, we feel more whole within ourselves. You know, we feel complete, we feel grounded. We feel that we're unshakable. So no matter what goes on out there, I'm okay in here. You know, I've got it together in here because this is what I can control. I can't control what's going on out there. But really and truly, the only place that I have control is within myself, over my mind and how that affects and manifests in my body.
And I think, you know, what you were saying about with the exercising particularly and operating 60 to 80% of what one's capacity. And once again, as you've said with Ayurveda, it's a customized approach, right? So 60 to 80% of one's capacity will look very different from person to person. For one person, running a marathon might only be 80% of their capacity, whereas for another person, going for a 5-minute walk might be 80% of their capacity, depending on how, you know, their health and their energy levels and all of that. So again, I think what I love about everything you said is that, you know, each element is so crucial and there's all these elements to look at. But once again, it's looking at what's true for you as an individual rather than just a one size fits all.
Perfect. I mean, you're spot on again. And, you know, traditionally, Ayurveda being an Indian science, traditionally the physical movement prescribed is yoga. But there are many different styles and forms of yoga and many different asanas, different poses. And so again, what is prescribed to a kapha dosha person who tends to be sluggish and slow moving, they tend to be on the heavy side naturally if they don't watch their weight. They're the ones who are prescribed to do the faster paced hot yoga type of yoga, not necessarily hot yoga, but the type of yoga where you sweat, you're doing like vinyasa, right? You're moving through flows. And that's very antithetical to what they would choose to do. They would rather do the slower yoga. If they could sign up for yoga class, they would sign up for the slower yoga because their natural predisposition, their natural nature is to be slow moving. So they would want more of the restorative yoga class. Whereas Ayurveda would say, no, again, to balance those scales, you're naturally slow moving and lazy. You need something that's go, 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 go when it comes to exercise. But for the Pitta dosha people who are naturally fiery and on the go and fast paced, Ayurveda would say, you are the ones who need that slow restorative yoga where you hold the poses for 3 minutes each. I know you don't want to. You know, I know you want to be the one who's flowing and breaking that sweat so you can feel good and feel aerobic about it, but no. You need that yoga to slow yourself down. Why? So that you can balance the scales. Because in every other facet of life, you're go, 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 go. Mm-hmm. And so this exercise time will be your time to slow down and restore and repair your mind, your body, your emotions.
Absolutely. And I love that. I love that. You know, it's again all about finding balance. It's not about doing the form of exercise which most matches your dosha. It's about balancing yourself and finding balance in life. So, Ziba, Do you have any, and I know it's going to be a little tricky because once again, it is custom I teach individual, but do you have any practical tips for people wanting to get started with incorporating Ayurvedic practices in their life and finding that balance?
From a super basic perspective, the first thing to do is to find out what dosha you are. And you can do that. There are online quizzes everywhere that you can take. And, you know, there's one on my website, but there's so many online. And once you know what your dosha is, and I would really, really urge you to work with someone if you can afford to, because it's so important that you work with someone who understands your dosha, mm-hmm. and that you not go on the internet and try to self-diagnose and again, select an herb from a list of 20, because you can inadvertently cause more harm to yourself than good if you're not careful. There is a lot of training and a lot of knowledge that's behind these things. So it's not, you know, like you mentioned earlier, we all have a secondary dosha as well. And so when we take herbs or when we make these lifestyle choices, we also have to take our secondary dosha into account, not just our primary dosha. And so it's really important that number one, you find out what your dosha is. And number two, I'd strongly urge you to work with someone who can customize something for you and to guide you along your journey. Because as you know, Jaya, when we make a change in one area, there is this ripple effect. And sometimes it can reveal something very unpleasant. And we need a guide to be there who can hold safe, sacred space for us so that we can heal along the way. Mm. Healing is not an individual solo journey that we are meant to endeavor upon. It is a collective. It's a collective endeavor, and we require a support group.
And if people are listening to this and want to work with you, how can people find out more about you and your work? And do you have spaces available for one-to-one coaching?
I do. They can go to my website, that's zebahealing.com, and they can sign up for a free consultation where I will find out what their health needs are, what their health goals are, and then we can see if we can work together to achieve what it is they'd like to see happen. Again, it's all about planting that seed of intention, right? And then manifesting what we'd love to see happen to the best of our ability.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for your time today. I've really enjoyed this conversation.
Thank you, Jaya. Thank you so much.